Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers. Welcome to Cavs a Podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with
Evil Genius.
Evil Genius, back from Exodus.
Well, not back, but at least a mid filming break.
We've summoned him via a seance here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm about halfway through, but hopefully by. I'll be back before the season's over, at least.
So. Well, is did you get to talk to your family and keep in touch with them today? That's the most important thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's hard during the week, but I try to FaceTime with them on the weekends. It doesn't get too far out of touch, but
yeah,
it's tricky though because it's about 10 hours. Difference.
Yeah, I was figuring it was between 10 and 11 hours.
Yeah, it's 10 normally, and now right now it's 9
because of DST.
Yeah, but then the EET goes through, I think this weekend also does their jump ahead, so it'll be back to 10 hours.
Oh, that's wild.
After the weekend, so that's kind of nuts, but it is what it is, you know. Just a few more weeks.
Well, it's warming up here in Northeast Ohio. I think it was in the 50s today. It feels like hopefully winter is behind us. I know it was a very long, cold, depressing winter here.
We had some snow here today. So.
Oh, did you? Okay. I tell you what,
we're not
this
quite
was
there yet.
The most depressing. This was the worst winter that I can remember in at least 50. Probably since I moved here.
Yeah.
20 years ago. COVID, it was cold and snowy.
Yeah, COVID definitely I think amplifies that considerably too. So
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the Cavs have given us some rays of sunshine. I mean
Not tonight.
But no, tonight's game was rough. Yeah, yeah, let me pull up a box score here because it was
you sure you want to?
Well, it's really interesting because the night before was a Toronto game that was as atypical of an NBA basketball game as you'll ever see. I don't think you will see many teams give up 27 turnovers and still win.
Yeah, that's bizarre. That's one of those you look at the box score and you're like, wait, did they
how did
put
this
the
happen?
Wrong score with the wrong team?
Yeah, it was a really goofy game, and against a better team, Cleveland probably would have won that game, or Cleveland probably would have lost that game, but last night was kind of not their night. But honestly, the funny thing is if you're looking at this game just from a pure draft pick standpoint, you're probably happy the Cavs lost this one because it dropped them behind the Kings in the standings for, you know, a lottery pick. if the Cavs
Kings still seem like they, I mean, I guess they're even further behind than the Cavs are in the Western Conference because the Western Conference is a little bit better than the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
But the Kings still feel like a team that could be on the, could have a puncher's chance to get that in the top 10 where they play the crazy play-in game or whatever it is.
Yeah, so. I mean, the Cavs are only a couple games out of that. I guess they're 4 games out of the play-in. So
well, they got another rough
they have a very rough stretch ahead of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But It was funny because I follow a guy named William Liu on Twitter, who's a longtime Toronto blogger, and he said, you know, from LeBronto to now getting sunned by Sexton and you know, the Cavs have ruined the Toronto season yet again after last night's game.
Well, I mean, they have been forced to play in Tampa, so I mean, they're the third best team in Tampa. So,
indeed, and
which is saying something. But I almost said the Patriots because of Tom Brady,
right?
I guess the Bucks won Super Bowl this year, and the Rays were pretty good too. So
hey, and the Lightning aren't bad.
Oh yeah, that's true. Lightning are not
they might
bad.
Be the so fourth the best fourth, team. In
they're
Tampa.
The fourth best team in Tampa, even though they're an adopted team in an adopted city.
But they have won a championship in the last few years, so you got to give them that.
Yeah. Hey, no, they definitely got their ring same as the Cavs did in 2016. Yeah. But
yeah, and it's. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, you've been hearing a lot about Lowry in the trade talks lately, and I kind of feel like it's about time. I mean, you know, if they don't trade him now, they're not going to trade him. They'll just get nothing for him. He'll just retire an honorary Raptor, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, if you looked at that game, the way it went, their center play is terrible. I mean, you know, Chris Boucher is putting up some numbers this year, but he's not a really good player. If there was a team that actually could use Andre Drummond, it's the Toronto Raptors. But the question is, does Toronto want to basically punt on this year and, you know, just develop young guys, or do they really want to try and compete?
Because they're not getting they're not going to get anywhere close to getting it. I mean, they're not even in the playoff picture right now.
No, but I feel like the East, well, maybe outside of the top three in the East, is bad enough that, you know, any team can make some noise. And then, of course, you've got playoff Bud, and anything can happen there.
I suppose. But like you said, like, they're not really a team that's built right now to win. I mean, I don't know what happened to Pascal Siakam, but he doesn't seem like the same player this year, at least in the little bit I've seen.
He's been hurt, and he was terrible in the bubble. He probably had the worst bubble of any kind of star player, and he hasn't really recovered from that, like you said.
Well, that's really why you wouldn't, you know, take on a Drummond, because you really just would be an expensive rental for that. You'd have to give up some kind of an asset for, at least a bad contract. I mean, there's some way that they could, like, it's a 3 or 4 team trade where Lowry ends up in Miami or Philly, and, you know,
I mean, there's a way they can do it with, like, Baines and Powell and OG Anunoby, but I'm not sure you make that move. Although Dwight Powell was a different. It had a kind of a hilarious night last night. Doubting you watched the game, but
Collins... No, I didn't, but I heard something about him and Sexton getting into some scuffle.
Yeah, and the funniest thing was, like, Colin Sexton in the third quarter played as well as I've seen him play. You know how, like, sometimes Colin Sexton will just start trying to take it super personally and try and do everything? He was doing that, but he was making great passes and feeding all his teammates and shooting open threes and letting the offense come to him. And he was really good. As good a quarter as I've seen from Colin Sexton. And just Powell was just playing like it. Idiot, just like coming down and going 1-on-3 and trying to dunk on, you know, Jared Allen, and just out of his game over and over for you, right?
I mean, you know, some nights some guy just decides to just get in his head, to get angry and goes off, and, you know, it's not sustainable in any sort of a series type of a situation. But for one night in the NBA, you can have your way with things. But
yeah, and It was fun to see Colin Sexton have that kind of a game for sure, because we've all seen these games where he gets in to, I'm just going to try and put my team on my back and score every game. But he was really doing it without moving without the ball as much as he was doing it moving, you know, with the ball. And the Cavs really played a really inspired third quarter. And unfortunately, the game was much closer than it should have been when the Cavs were up by, I want to say, 22. And then ended
up... Well, because that's where the turnovers come in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and ended up only winning by 11 and being, you know, I think they cut it all the way to 4 at one point. And it was pretty crazy.
They were pretty good with the turnovers tonight, except for Garland.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot was made after the broadcast about just it being the back to back, and you know,
yeah,
the Cavs,
I saw Jeff Phelps
winded.
went to that excuse pretty quickly.
He really
like insta excuse, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that holds much water anymore. Like, come on, like these guys are, I don't know. I mean, and the way that JB did his sort of hockey line shifts tonight, anyways, was like, well, all right. How can you be tired if you only wind up playing 25 minutes, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly an interesting ball game from a Cleveland standpoint. I mean, at the end of that, like you said, in the first half, we were sitting at 50 points with about 7.5 minutes left in the second quarter, and I'm like, and you were saying, "Hey, first team to 140 wins."
Well. And that was before the Cavs started missing pretty much every shot and running zero offense in the third quarter. I mean, they had 9 points, you know, with about 2 minutes left to go, and it was starting to look like that. I'd heard about that one game, maybe on the road trip when they lost 10 straight, when they had like a 9-point, and it was just, you know, it was just awful. So
yeah, and you saw them doing a lot of what they were doing in that stretch of, oh, we're just going to, you know, guys just settling for elbow runners over and over.
Well,
and
just guys going one-on-one against the whole team. I mean, you brought up a good point, which is, you know, you really, maybe I thought it was you, but the Cavs really showed their starting lineup as a scoring problem. I mean, they really don't, you know, when Sexton or Garland, either one of them is not shooting the ball well. They don't seem to know how to get the ball down low to Jared Allen consistently. Okoro doesn't score at all. I mean, I know he had 15 points in the Toronto game, but that was sort of odd anomaly, fourth quarter explosion. And then, you know, Nance has been, seems pretty rusty since he came back again.
Yeah, he's been real hit or miss. You saw a lot tonight. Sacramento was double teaming Allen without the ball a lot, and Cleveland really didn't know how to get into a set quickly to take advantage of that. You know, part of that is Larry Nance Jr. flashing to the free throw line, but another problem. So there's a guy I, you know, talk to a lot on Twitter. His name's John Coker, or I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce this, Kocher. But anyway, he was talking a lot about the comparisons of Allen and Windler playing together versus Allen and Nance playing together. And you know, the net rating for Allen and Windler, or not Windler, Dean Wade, sorry, is a lot higher. And mainly because
Dean Wade had a pulse.
Yeah, Dean Wade, you know, can fill it up from deep, has that quick release, seems to move without the ball. But I think the other side of that is, you know, like you noted, and multiple people on the live thread noted, you know, the Cavs don't move off the ball and basically just go plant Isaac Okoro in a corner. And I think it's really hard to, you know, really hard for Okoro and Nance to share the floor together, because they're both players who are pass first players and don't look for their own shot and don't, you know, they'll shoot a three when they're wide open, but they're not those guys that I've got, you know, an inch of daylight, I'm going to shoot a three, you know, even Tareem,
they don't seem to run anything. I mean,
yeah, well,
I mean,
that's
correct
also
me if
true.
I'm wrong, but like, like even early on, they were just running and gunning with the Kings, and things were going in. But
yeah,
you know, they got into that stretch in the third where the starters were back out there, and I think, you know, I mean, Luke Walton's pretty smart coach, and even though the Kings aren't super good at defense, they've had a lot of problems this year. You know, if you sort of sit back and say, all right, well, you know, we know these guys aren't going to be able to score on us that easily. So, you know, and if we can force, well, that's what teams are looking to do. They're just looking to force, you know, Sexton and Garland to go hero ball and,
yeah,
you know,
or
and
Nance or Okoro to beat you 1-on-1, which that's not their game.
Yeah, exactly. So if you stop passing the ball, I mean, they had like 29 assists last night against the Raptors, and then they had 22 tonight. But you know, it seemed like a lot of them came in the first half when shots were going down. And,
yeah, it makes me wonder if that starting lineup, not as much as being physically tired from the 1-on-1. But being mentally tired, the back to back. I mean, I thought it was interesting because they were running a practice yesterday on top of it being the first night of a back to back. And you saw some practice highlights from, or at least some photos from Cleveland Clinic courts where, you know, Kevin Love was playing. And it makes you wonder, it's like.
Kevin Love was playing?
In the practice session, yeah.
Right.
They showed him on the floor practicing with the Cavs on Sunday. But he wasn't obviously.
Did they sell tickets to that kind of thing?
Only at 20% capacity. Only about 20% of the media can come. So.
I don't know if I'm ever going to get a chance to see Kevin Love play again. Ever.
So I was getting into this on Twitter a little bit tonight. You will see Kevin Love get a chance to play again because unless Kevin Love plays like tomorrow and has a 30-point game, nobody's trading for him this year. I mean, you're just
I know that. Yeah. I'm saying like, well, but then, you know, like what's I mean, well, what's he doing? Like,
well, it's going to be a little bit like, you know, John Wall, where he just may be out for the better part of two seasons, and then you'll see him next year. But the Cavs aren't buying him out. They're not stretch paying him at least until after the 2022 trade deadline. Because if they were,
it reminds me of the Danny Ferry contract in the day.
Just an order of magnitude higher in terms of the dollar amount, but yeah.
Yeah, he's just here. Like, he's not going anywhere. He's just old and slow and injured all the time and costs a lot of money.
Now, there's that great. I don't know if you were ever a Cheers fan, but there's a great Cheers line about, or no, it was on Frasier, and you know how on Frasier everybody from Cheers like made a guest star appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there was one where they had Sam Malone, and he was talking about, yeah, Rebecca, she's back at the bar. Oh, she's working at nope, she's just back at the bar. That's kind of what Kevin Love reminds me of at this point. Like, he's not really doing anything. He's just kind of there.
I feel bad. I mean, look, you know, I mean, I think he's done a lot for not just, you know, players in the NBA, but athletes in general, just with the mental health thing. But no, this calf thing has really kind of gotten the better of him.
Well, and I don't know how much of it's mental, but I think the other side of it is just guys sometimes have these injury issues that don't go away. I mean, it's really interesting. You see a guy that's having, you knew it would come back to Thad Young. Young is having a great year, and he looked like almost out of the league last year. Like, he was so bad, and because he had a hip injury that was just, you know, taking forever to heal. And, you know, guys have these injuries that take a long time, and not that I'm, you know, some huge Kevin Love stan. I mean, I'll always love the guy for what he did in 2016 all those championship games, but or all those playoff games. But it's still, you know, they're going to have to figure out you know, how to play without him. And it's a really tough situation, but, you know, you just got to be patient. Well, it's really all you can really do.
And they kind of got caught in between. I mean, you know, there's a lot of these sort of like treading water moves that they've made that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I was going to lead into that. I mean, I don't know if we've talked about the game enough, but I kind of feel just saying like it was maybe the JaVale McGee goodbye game.
No, I think we can get back to the game a little bit, because I definitely want to talk about, you know, the difference between the starters and the bench. But what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to sort of roll into the whole, like, this team's got a lot of decisions to make. I mean, there's the immediate ones, like, you know, I mean, the trade deadline's this week. Clearly nobody's trading for Andre Drummond and his Albatross contract, so he's probably, I mean, does he get bought out?
I think somebody will actually trade for him.
What's that?
I think somebody will actually trade for him.
You do?
I do. I think there is a trade there if the Cavs want to do it. The problem is whoever the Cavs kind of trade for him, teams are going to try and attach, you know, I don't want to call it bad money, but, you know, longer-term contracts.
I think I read somewhere that they said they've actually come out and said that they would take bad money back.
Yeah, but they want
more assets
to take that back.
But here's my point.
Okay.
I know what the optics are. I read the stupid Draymond Green comments back, you know, when the whole Drummond decision went down. But it sounds like to me, from other things I've read, that it was as much Drummond saying, hey, you know what? If I'm not gonna be here, then I don't wanna take the chance of getting injured. So it sounded like kind of a mutual thing. That they decided to say, all right, well, we're not going to play you. You're not going to play. Let's see what we can work out a deal for you.
But well, here's the crazy. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, I was going to say, if they can't do that, I mean, that's an awful lot of money to eat on a buyout. I mean, that's what, $28.5 million. So
yeah, if, I mean, it would be the prorated portion of that, but it would still probably be, you know, about $18 million.
Yeah. So I guess my point is, like, he's still an expiring deal that you could use as a way to fit, you know, as a trade chip in the summertime, right? I mean,
as a sign and trade, yeah.
A sign and trade, right? I mean, that's still more valuable than just buying a guy out and letting him go join the Lakers or in the Nets or something like that, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it like that. One of the things that's the strangest thing about all this is the guy has been an absolute, like, he's sitting there joking with his teammates on the sideline against Toronto. Like, he's still showing up on the bench, supporting his teammates. He was photobombing Colin Sexton after the game on the post-game interview. I mean, it's not like, you know, he seems like a guy that's terrible to play with on the court, yet a delight off the court, which is
right.
a really odd dichotomy I'm not sure I've ever seen before.
I've heard he's a pretty affable guy, but
yeah,
I guess that, but it's from a business standpoint. Like, look, you got him for nothing last year.
Yeah.
And all you had to do was take on this massive salary.
Yeah. And if you buy him out, what are you saving? The cost of a minimum salary, probably.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like honestly, if no one trades for him, I would have another conversation and say, all right, well, you want to keep playing then? Because we're not going to buy you out. So we're not going to pay you $18 million to go win a championship with the Lakers or the Nets. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a very interesting conversation. And maybe they say, hey, you want to get bought out, you got to give up more money.
Sure.
And of course, and that's the conversation I've heard about Kevin Love is, you know, maybe Kevin Love gives up $10 million to go play with another team because things aren't working out with the Cavs. But yeah, I'm with you.
Although
there.
I don't feel like, I think there are two different situations.
I'm not arguing with that at all.
Yeah, no, but just where Drummond's at in his career. I mean, Drummond's still this side of 30. He's still, you know, even though big men are you know, some big back to the basket sort of big men like Drummond, or although he thinks he's a point guard still, which is where he gets himself into trouble. But still, you know what I mean? Like he's a more traditional big man that you know, his place in the game is not what it once was. So no one's paying him $28 million next year. I would be shocked if he got half that to, you know, in a contract, you know, going forward with somebody. So he seems to me destined to be a guy who plays on probably a series of like 1 and 2 year deals, you know, and maybe gets into the right situation. And
yeah, because he's not Hassan Whiteside.
He's better than Hassan Whiteside. I mean, Hassan Whiteside is that rare guy who, like, there's a reason why he kicked around in the G League for years or whatever they called it then. And then, you know, he got lightning in the bottle for a year or two. And then he went back to being kind of that subpar player
knucklehead
that he was. Yeah.
I mean, the play tonight where the ball was going out of bounds and he's like, I got to pad my rebounding stats. And he decided he was going to save it back in and then stepped on the baseline.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is Hassan Whiteside's career in a nutshell.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I imagine Hassan Whiteside will be playing in China or something in another year or two. But
oh yeah, him and Isaiah Thomas forming the core of the Guangdong Ducks or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I don't know. I just Andre Drummond still has value to the right team, but he's not a $28 million a year value. He's probably a $10 to $12 million a year player. And it's probably short-term deals for teams that are just looking for looking maybe even for a big man off the bench, somebody to come in and just grab instant rebounds, you know, kind of what's happened with Tristan in Boston now.
Yeah. So. Now, and to me, that's the reason why I think he probably does get moved, because there are all these teams, and now that the Lakers have the LeBron injury on top of the Anthony Davis injury, I think there are a lot of teams that are probably suddenly saying, hey, we might have a shot here, you know, because
maybe
if
although
the Lakers make it.
But who takes on that salary for a 2 month rental? Like, I know I saw some stories about Dallas maybe doing it, but even that's my like. Is Dallas anywhere close to being good enough to, you know, to?
I think when you've got a player as good as Luka Doncic, you're always good enough if things start breaking right for you. You know, the other side of that, there's teams like the Knicks, the Celtics. I think he would make all the sense in the world for the Celtics. The Celtics, you know, their biggest problem is they don't have great center play.
Right.
And yeah, they have an offense that is way too ISO heavy and, you know, can go through real dry spells. But, you know, maybe there's a
three-way deal where the Cavs send Drummond to Boston and Boston sends Tristan to Toronto and Toronto sends Kyle Lowry to Philly. And Philly sends some, I don't know, like Furkan Korkmaz or something like that.
No, I think there's definitely possibilities of three-way deals. I mean, I pitched a deal where, you know, Chicago gives up Otto Porter, and then Otto Porter goes to the Cavs, and then Andre Drummond goes to the Celtics through Boston. So, I mean, there's... Or the other way around. But, I mean, there's ways to do it, but it's going to be weird. But just my gut tells me there's a more than 50% chance Andre Drummond actually gets moved.
I don't know, man. I want to believe you, but I also feel like, you know, but I just think that the whole buyout market is sort of silly, too. Like, I just
well, that is also true.
Why you would pay somebody to, you know, go play for somebody else, and I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really help you in any way, shape, or form. because the money's still on the books for the rest of the year anyways.
How much more money does Dan Gilbert need? I was arguing with somebody today. He's like literally $50 billion richer than he was a few years ago.
Yeah. But I guess that was just the tip of the iceberg for me. It's like it's funny, like so many more teams are interested in JaVale McGee, but like he's the kind of guy you want to keep around to be a good influence on the team.
He's
actually making an impact.
Which is such a great way to segue back to this game of JaVale McGee. Like at the beginning of the season, would you have in a million years thought that JaVale McGee would be the heart and soul of the Cavs bench?
No.
I mean, it's just, he's amazing.
Cause it's funny, like, you know, you remember, you know, early days when he was the, you know, the Shaq and a full poster boy with the Wizards, you know, he's still out jumping guys that are, you know, 10 years younger than him.
He amazes me, his athleticism. Like,
yeah. I mean, he had 18 points in 19 minutes tonight with 9 rebounds.
Yeah, and 3 assists. They're literally running their offense blocks through him off the bench.
Yeah, I know.
Did you see that lead pass he had to Garland?
Oh, yeah, it was nice. Really nice.
I mean, he obviously does that too much and, you know, still had 3 turnovers to go along with that. And then, of course, we all cringed when the Cavs bench run was basically ended by JaVale McGee when they're rolling and then he decides,
but
hey,
he had no choice. No one else was making themselves available.
I'm with you. So you know, he took
like at least he was doing something.
You know, to summarize for those who didn't watch the game, he took a top of the key 3 that did it airball or did it brick so hard it just ignited the break for the Kings?
Yeah, I think it was the brick. It was only Jetty seems to airball 3s wildly.
It was the, you know, danger planes from Cleveland Hopkins.
Yeah.
3-point shot. And then it led to a wide open Tyrese Halliburton 3 that pretty much, like, it was a 6-point swing. It was like, oh, I guess that's the end of the run. Because I think the Cavs had cut it to 10, and then it was kind of all of a sudden back to 13. But still,
well, they cut it to 10 because they put in McGee and Lee Stevens and give Chetty credit. Like, he can't shoot,
Lamar Stevens?
Still play some. No. Is it Lamar Stevens? Not Lee Stevens?
It is Lamar Stevens.
Oh, Lee Stevens is a baseball player. That's right. Lamar Stevens. Sorry.
It's okay.
I was impressed by Lamar Stevens. I had not seen him play. And
he's had some fantastic games. He played great in the last 2 games. He played really well against Toronto. He was phenomenal against San Antonio. I kind of wrote about it in that big long write-up I did on Sunday. But he was great in the press and at the end of that game. And he's a really good defensive player. You know, a guy who can score out of the post in the half court. You know, his biggest problem is his offensive game doesn't really match outside of transition what teams are looking for in the NBA right now from a 3-4 player. But, you know, he's a really fun player and he defends his butt off and he can.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He was all over the court tonight when you watch him. I mean, he made the most of his 13 minutes, but like I'm confused. Like, I thought Jared Allen was having some good games, but I sort of looked up the last 3, I guess it was decent against Toronto, but like he said some like just feels like is he just being double teamed? Are they not really looking for him? Like,
so it's a couple fold thing. He has not been the same player after the All-Star break. I mean, I was not exaggerating when I said it really felt like he spent the All-Star break on the couch. Because he just has not looked like the same player. And he was just absolutely dominant before the All-Star game and, you know,
playing above
the rim consistently. And he just doesn't seem to have that same explosiveness. Maybe he's nursing an injury. I will say the other side of it is the Cavs really have a hard time getting the ball consistently. And maybe that's an issue with the Cavs playing guys who can't spread the floor.
It's hard when you're only 6 feet tall and you can't really see over the.
Well, that is also true. yeah, that is totally true.
And why is Damian Dotson up?
Well, so I think Damian Dotson was really slumping for a while. Basically, had one good game in five. And that's part of the reason they brought in Quinn Cook, because they really didn't have a solution at backup point guard. They had tried Damian Dotson there. You know, it worked some nights, but more often than not, it didn't. And then, of course, you know, Dylan Windler, they kind of don't know what to do with him. They tried.
I don't think Dylan Windler knows what to do with Dylan Windler. That's
also true. But, you know, really, Chetty Osman was the de facto backup point guard for a while. The problem with Chetty Osman is he does everything well but shoot right now. Like, he can't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, when he's playing well, he's shooting 33% from the field. And when he's playing badly, he's shooting like 10%. So, you know, they brought in Quinn Cook to basically, okay, let's try this guy. And it's funny, I made fun of Quinn Cook today, and, you know, I call him Quinn Cooked with an ED at the end, or what did I say? What was the other one? Quinn Cucked. And, but he still led the team in plus minus. He was still plus 16 for the game. He does seem to know how to get the ball to JaVale McGee in spots to kind of start a good offensive action. And, you know, the rest of the Cavs off the bench are playing well enough that's good enough. But, you know, like you said, Dylan Windler really doesn't seem to know where he's supposed to be or what he's supposed to do. And I think part of that is – sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's hard not to blame the coaching, right? I mean
– oh, I'm with you.
You know, I mean, I guess he didn't really have a rookie season because of the stress.
No, this is his rookie year, yeah.
Yeah, but he just, I don't know if it's, I mean, I just haven't seen enough of him play, obviously, because, you know, it's been a while since I've seen them. But, I mean, it doesn't, from the things I read, it doesn't sound like he's figuring it out too well.
Well, he's super streaky. I mean, he had that stretch of two games where he hit 9 straight threes, and then before that and after that, he kind of couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. I think his confidence waxes and wanes, and they don't run a lot of actions, you know, off the ball that make sense for a guy of his skill set.
Well, and defensively, they really shouldn't put him on smaller players. like what happened tonight, man.
Oh, I missed the play. So like was there a particular play?
Waving a red cape in front of De'Aaron Fox. So.
Oh, well, yeah. And De'Aaron Fox is good enough to make you look silly for the most part. He's a guy that it feels like his role fluctuates so much. It's kind of messing with his confidence. And I think you're seeing a lot of the frustrations that JB Bickerstaff had in his other stints, you know, with the Grizzlies. And I can't remember the other team that he coached for. It might have been Houston. The knock on him is his offenses are too simplistic. He basically tries to, you know, get everything out of the guys playing hard on defense and getting in transition. But the NBA is too tough.
Sounds a lot like Ty Lue.
Yeah. Well, no, I will say one thing that Ty Lue is a million times better than him. You know, JB Bickerstaff's out of bounds plays are consistently terrible. You know, they have a problem all the time getting the ball in at the ends of games. He basically has two sideline out of bounds plays that he calls the entire year. I mean, I would say that was one thing no one would say Ty Lue was bad at out of bounds plays. Like, he always seemed to be able to pull one out of his sleeve, you know.
That's a good point.
But, you know, sustained half court offense. Yeah, maybe not Ty Lue's forte. And You might be seeing it a little bit right now with the Clippers, but yeah, I mean, but the Cavs have a lot of intriguing young players. You know, I wrote about Broderick Thomas a little bit. I do think Damian Dotson's pretty much on the outs, and I would be surprised to see him back in a Cavs uniform next year. I certainly think right. he would be in any trade conversation just from an expiring contract standpoint, but because it is a team option for next year.
But I was going to say, that's kind of where I really wanted to go with this. And it's a good segue into that, which is...
Well, let me just wrap up. All these guys off the Cavs bench did have a really good night tonight. I mean, the bench absolutely outplayed the starters.
For sure.
And, the Cavs did have some good players off the bench. So, and they outplayed the Kings bench. So what were you going to say?
No, I guess, we sort of talked a little bit about the, Drummond and, McGee and, Jetty's been on the trade block as well. But when you think of it, look at it, you say, okay, well, what's the core of this team, right? I mean, no one seems to want to move Nance Jr., and they shouldn't. I mean, he's a good player, but although he is, he's 27, 28 now. So, you have to sort of ask yourself, well, if teams are so hot to get him, is he somebody who's going to be around in a couple of years, as the sort of veteran on the team, to try to really lead these young guys. But, can you really justify, I don't know. Can you max Sexton? Cause he's probably going to want it, right?
Yeah. I think that's the biggest, like you were saying, the biggest question the Cavs have to answer. If it were me, I would not max him. I don't think he is a guy. I think his game at 6'1", just, I've been saying it for 2 or 3 years, it doesn't really work. He's not a guy that makes his teammates better. He goes on long stretches where he kind of plays
seven
hero ball.
Tonight, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
I'm with you. Like, he still has a bad habit of dribbling into like 3 and 4 players, and he's very much a straight line player. Like, everything he shoots seems to be from the 3-point line in. It's just kind of a straight line. He just sort of either pulls up for the three or he dribbles it straight ahead and tries for that mid range.
I don't think I've ever seen him take a Euro step.
No, but that's just it. He's a very straight line player, and that's fine. But that is a bit limiting when you're trying to create, because you're easy to defend if that's your game. So, and that's typically what happens. He winds up losing his dribble or getting blocked, or Rishon Holmes had a pretty nice chase down block on him tonight, which
he did. Yeah, that was a nice play.
Not really Sexton's fault. I mean, he's pretty quick. So
yeah, but Sexton gets a shot block. I mean, I would be shocked if he wasn't still among the lead leaders.
I'm sure, but again, he's become a good scorer, both inside and outside. I mean, he shoots the three ball really well, and he seems like he works hard. I mean, he's a gym rat, and he. He really busts his tail, and he's really the only Cavs. He's the only guy the Cavs have that seems like he can go off for 20, 30 points a night. Everybody else feels like varying degrees of that. But I don't know. When I look at him, I don't see a max player. I see a nice scoring threat, a guy who, is probably best suited as a, either an off-ball scorer or the,
with a big guard.
Or a super sub off the bench. I mean, somebody who, it's funny, is he Jordan Clarkson or is he, or is he, I don't know.
I think that's, there's been
like a short version of Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell and he are the Donovan Mitchell's actually shorter than him.
Is he really?
Donovan Mitchell is only 6 feet, but he's built like a tank, and he has really long arms. And I would say, Donovan Mitchell probably is longer than Colin Sexton, but not taller, which is kind of a weird But yeah, officially Mitchell's only listed at 6 feet. So
okay,
now I got to look that up to confirm that. But the funny thing is, and Adam Cathcart did a really good job of. No, I guess he's 6'1", so they're the same height. But you know, comparison still applies. Adam Cathcart did a really nice job on the last pod, kind of describing the problem is that the Cavs' marketing of Colin Sexton kind of doesn't match the Cavs' you know, his impact as a player, and that's fine. But when you're marketing him as the face of your franchise and kind of the quote unquote future for the last 3 years, and you know, you've treated him as such, well, he's going to want to get paid for that. And does it really help the Cavs long term if a guy that is fairly one dimensional is getting that treatment? You know, and it's going to be, like you said, a weird offseason, because not only is Colin Sexton due for a contract extension, but Jared Allen's a restricted free agent. So they may be dealing out $200+ million worth of, you know, long-term extensions this offseason,
right,
and new contracts this offseason.
Yeah. And you kind of have to, you really have to be sure that that's your, I mean, look, I'm a big Jared Allen believer. I think if Jared Allen's used properly with, you know, with the right, you know, the right facilitators getting him the ball that know how to get him the ball, like, I think, you know, I think he's definitely a the kind of big man you can, you know, that you can really build around, especially a front line of, you know, him, Nance, and that, you know, you, it's funny, the kind of the perfect guy would be a healthy Kevin Love, but, you know, Kevin Love is never healthy, so that's why Dean Wade looks so good next to those guys, because, you know, Dean Wade is a, you know, a sort of poor man version of what Kevin used to be. So
I'm with you. I think one of the things the Cavs might want to look at is, you know, starting Dean Wade instead of Larry Nance or Isaac Okoro, and kind of see what that gets you.
Right.
I think that would be worth a look, because I don't think those other two guys are giving you enough offense or are willing enough shooters, you know. And I saw some great moments from Dean Wade tonight. But, you know, if it's me, I don't extend Colin, or I don't give Colin Sexton a contract extension. I basically, you know, make him bet on himself and earn a big contract. Or just let him get to restricted free agency the next, you know.
Right.
And there's some PR problems there, and there's probably a managing the relationship problems. But I also think it's, you know, if the right offer were to come along next year, it would be easier to move him with that, because he's not in a poison pill contract standpoint. I think it gives you another year to evaluate the situation. I mean, to me, part of the issue is I don't think long-term, a starting backcourt of Sexton and Garland ever makes sense. And you can compare it to, you know, Damian Lillard and C.J. McConnell if you want. But C.J. McConnell's still 2 inches taller than those guys. And neither of those guys... neither of those guys are Damian Lillard. I mean, Damian Lillard is an absolutely special player that is doing things that literally nobody in the history of the NBA, except maybe Steph Curry's ever done in terms of his long distance shooting.
I mean, look, it may be too early, but I'm not a big Garland thing.
Yeah.
I don't think he feels like Jeff Teague to me. Like, he feels like a guy who, you know, I mean, he's so reliant on his you know, his mid-range floater shots. You know, I just think he gets lost in it.
I think he's a much better passer than Teague is. I think he has an opportunity to be a special passer and a special point guard. I question whether that can happen in this offense. But I don't think you've watched him as much as the rest
of us have. No, I haven't.
This year. And I'm not saying as a knock on you, just Tonight was definitely not his best game. He struggled tonight, but he's had some brilliant games this year. And, you know, from a long-term potential standpoint, I like him immensely more than Colin Sexton, mainly because he's a more willing shooter, more willing passer, and a better off-ball defender. I mean, he's just has better vision on both ends of the court.
So if you were gonna build around guys, you would build around Garland, Allen, and Nance, and maybe Okoro?
And maybe Okoro, yeah. I mean, I like Sexton, I just don't think he's worth a max contract is the problem. And you can't build a team around
it. Honestly, it's hard to justify it. I mean,
yeah.
He's a scorer.
He's a primary scorer who's 6'1".
Yeah.
You know. And you can be that,
but I don't know that you can be a primary scorer who's a straight line scorer.
Who doesn't really do anything else.
Right.
You know, he doesn't rebound.
That's why, Jordan Clarkson works really well for the Jazz because that's all they ask him to do.
Right. Plus he's 6'5".
Well, yeah.
He can get his shot off against players that Colin Sexton can't.
Right.
You know, it's... And he's not Dana Barros, where he's one of these guys that can just absolutely shoot from, 30 feet consistently. He's more of a catch and shoot shooter.
Right.
So he does. It feels like to me, if he wants to be that max contract guy, you've got to say in the offseason, you need to develop your game. You got to get more wiggle. You got to increase your range. You've got to increase your ability to shoot off the dribble effectively. And. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like, long term, the Cavs need a coach that's going to bring some diversity and, sustainability to the offense, because you cannot build an offense like the Cavs have around elbow runners, which they've done too many times this season.
Definitely feels like their bread and butter. I mean, that they get into this sort of panic mode and just start jacking up these,
Yeah, and especially when they're mentally tired, when they go on these long road trips. I mean, what was it Chris Kay said on the live thread tonight? How do you, in today's NBA, only shoot 4 3-pointers and a half?
Yeah. Yeah.
Against a team that's playing abysmal defense.
True. Well, especially after you had such a good display in the Toronto game the night before.
And I will say, one thing that just drives me absolutely batty is, and Colin Sexton's terrible about it, is finding shooters in transition at the 3-point line. The Cavs are awful at it. Like, you see guys coming down on the break.
They're awful at it. They just don't even try.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, are they even coached to do it? You see them coming down on the break, guys fan out to the 3-point line, then nobody ever passes to them, even though they don't really have anybody in 10 feet. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's too many guys that are too hesitant to shoot, and then too many guys that are too hesitant to make that pass. It's interesting, and it leads to bad floor balance, too, when you see these guys take these drives, and then, Colin Sexton had a drive where it looked like he got fouled, and he didn't, and then the whole team's playing 4-on-5 on the other end of the court.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's true. It's a problem. I get it. It's back to back. I get it. It's the last, game, but, the homestand, and, it doesn't get easier. They go on the road to the Bulls, who've been actually pretty decent this year. And then you go on the West Coast swing. I mean, this could very well be the kind of the proverbial nail in terms of like where they say, all right, well, it's time to start thinking about draft picks. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, this is a brutal road trip coming up. I think they got next game they play the Bulls on Wednesday, then they have a Friday, Saturday to back to back in with the Lake at the Lakers at the Kings.
Right.
Which, funnily enough, both those games are winnable now that LeBron James is out. But then they play the Jazz on Monday, which, the Jazz killed them. Then they play the Sixers on Tuesday.
Yeah. Eesh. And then at Miami, at San Antonio, at OKC, Toronto, they're going to want revenge. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, maybe the Charlotte game. like April 14th. Like now that LaMelo's broken his wrist, I guess.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is they don't shoot very well on the road either. So they're a worse shooting team on the road, which to me is really funny in a NBA season where there's basically a negligible, crowd factor.
They should beat the Sixers on April Fool's Day, though, right? I mean, they've had the Sixers number this year anyways, and why not if it's going to be a day April Fool's? Good.
Yeah, I mean... And honestly, the Lakers and Kings games are winnable. The Bulls game's winnable. They just got to play well. But if it starts to snowball, it's going to get bad. And to me, it's not the worst thing in the world because I really think if you ask Kobe Altman without the cameras on if he wanted the Cavs to be really bad or be a playoff team this year, he'd much rather they be really bad, but show some signs of growth.
It's a good year to be bad if you're going to do it, because it's probably the most stacked draft probably since the Anthony Davis draft, right?
Yeah. I mean, and maybe even more so because they feel like there are, four or five just can't miss guys at the top of the draft. And
right.
The last time we really saw something like that, it's been a while. So I mean,
nice.
But I'm excited
nice
to watch him play.
It'd be nice to get a wing who could shoot.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him play. I'd love to see more Broderick Thomas. You know, I kind of hope that they do make some moves at the trade deadline that kind of clear out some playing time. I do think they'll make some moves.
I don't know how they're going to do that, but...
Yeah. Well, that
you got to find a taker first.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely would be a market for JaVale McGee, but it's funny because you always overvalue your own players, too.
But, I mean, honestly, what do you get for JaVale at best?
Yeah.
Second-round pick? A conditional second-round pick?
Then the other side of it is, well, why don't you just keep him and bring him back next year and... You know, if he's been so positive for this team, why don't you let him stick around?
Right.
So I don't know.
Because he's already got four rings from his time with the Warriors and Lakers.
Yeah, that's true.
At least three.
I can't remember. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know how many years he played with the Warriors.
I think I got to look this up. I'm pretty sure he's got at least three. I know for sure he has two, and I think he's got three.
Yeah, now I definitely have to look it up. So he played two seasons with Golden State, 16-17 and 17-18, and then two seasons with the Lakers. So he has three rings.
Right. Still, I mean, like,
three more than I got.
Well, I'm saying he's sort of done the ring-chasing part of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You know, if you like the situation, he's a positive impact player, but I mean, it just depends on what you get back for a guy, right? Like,
well,
what is his value?
The other thing that's really interesting about him is he's kind of defied the age curve for a center. His biggest scoring year and his most efficient year was when he was 31 with the Lakers. I mean, obviously, playing with LeBron James will do that.
Yeah, that's always going to pad your stats.
You and I both noted his athleticism for 33. I've never seen a 33 that's as explosive as JaVale McGee, except maybe LeBron James.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, he's kept himself in good shape, and he's definitely rounded into a good player mentally, too.
Ironically, the team that could really use him is the Lakers.
No, they really could, too, and I'm sure they're regretting giving him up. Like, I mean, it was one thing to give up on Dwight Howard, but...
Well, I think the reason they gave him up
is because... I was surprised they got rid of JaVale, too.
Well, they were hard-capped.
Right.
And that they literally couldn't sign people because they were so close to the cap, so... It was...
That's a good point.
It was a difficult situation for them, but now they, kind of have similar issues. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, is there... So I know you haven't probably followed the NBA too much at all. Is there anybody that you just absolutely expect to see get moved at the trade deadline coming up? Or are you just too far away from it?
No, the one name that I assumed would get moved is Oladipo.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's like, there's no way Houston keeps him, to me.
No, especially because they're like, I mean, they've lost 20 games straight or something crazy like that. And
I mean, he's expressed zero interest in being there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not certain. He hasn't been the same guy since he got injured, but...
No. If he was half as good as he thinks he is, he'd be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like he'll probably get moved. I feel like... feels like Orlando's finally breaking up that core.
Vucevic
that
and never Gordon
anything.
And Fournier. Yeah. I mean, at least one of those guys is going to go. And I wouldn't be surprised to see two of them.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to either. I mean, Lowry should go somewhere, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really. I mean, that's sort of the extent of it. That's just what I've seen, like, on the either the Shams page or the Watch page. But yeah, I mean, seems more quiet than it has been in years past. I think a lot of that probably just due to the COVID impact of everything.
Yeah, what
too,
a weird
you know?
Season it is. Yeah.
I mean, it's just log jams all the way through the standings. It just doesn't feel like there's a team that, especially now with LeBron hurt, doesn't feel like there's a team that really, you know, is sort of dominant, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think Miami's going to make moves. I absolutely, a lot of people have, you know, rumored Oladipo there. They certainly have guys they could move. I don't know what assets they have because they pretty much
I don't know. I mean, do they? I mean, I haven't watched the Heat game all year. I mean, obviously they got Jimmy Butler back, and
game I watched them play against the Cavs, they look like the team that was in the.
Right.
I mean, they are really rounding into form, and Jimmy.
I mean,
Butler,
is Tyler Herro healthy or?
He is. He's playing okay. Duncan Robinson's playing okay, but Bam Adebayo is ridiculously good, and you know, Kelly Olynyk still does super annoying Kelly Olynyk things, but they help you win ball games. And you know, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro and Kendrick Nunn can all put the ball in the basket when you leave them open, and they still got Dragic, who's kind of coasting towards the postseason anyway. But Jimmy Butler, like, he's got arms like Karl Malone now. Like, that guy is so ridiculously strong. I don't know if I've ever seen a player that size that strong. I mean, he's just built different. I mean, he's Karl Malone as a guard.
That's funny.
I mean, it's crazy.
Do you think, are they kind of your favorite for the East? Or?
No, I think, I mean, if you had to pick a favorite, honestly, at this point, it's probably the Nets. But, you know, their own internal dynamics.
Even with no defense?
Well, their own internal dynamics are going to, you know, be the determiner of how far they get. I think Philly's game, much like Daryl Morey's Houston teams, will fall apart a little bit in the playoffs because they're so dependent on flopping.
And Milwaukee's got Coach Bud until they realize that he's not he can't win in the playoffs. Then
my favorite for the NBA championship right now is the Jazz. I think they're the best team playing right now. And
so you think you're going for Jazz Heat or Jazz Nets?
I think Jazz Nets probably. And then the Jazz win like a 130 to 127 finals victory to close it out.
So I got to ask this question because I haven't been tracking it, but I got a little excited the other day when I heard rumors about this. Is Brad Stevens the genius going back to the college ranks?
No, he's not. It was funny because everybody was saying that, and then the guy who tweeted it basically didn't tweet out anything else for 2 days. And I don't think I would be shocked if that happened, because Brad Stevens could go get another job in the NBA tomorrow. I mean, if Boston didn't want to pay him anymore.
I'm going to say something that I've said for pretty much forever. And that is Brad Stevens has won zero things in the NBA. And until Brad Stevens wins something, I will not be convinced that President Brad Stevens is a basketball genius. So.
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, to me, Nick Nurse is the player that everybody said Brad or the coach everyone said Brad Stevens was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
look, Danny Ainge is a fraud.
Oh my God, Danny Ainge is a bigger fraud than anybody. Has anybody ever turned more draft capital into more mediocre basketball players than Danny Ainge? Well, and that kind of like goes to what's going on in Houston and Oklahoma City right now. It's like I read something they've got like 28 draft picks in the next 5 years or something like that, and like what are you going to do with that?
Yeah,
I mean they're literally
start another team. This is Oklahoma City's plan. They're going to actually give back to Seattle and just give them all these draft picks to start a whole brand new team.
No, I mean I think you're literally going to see what Philly did, where they're going to have a major source of their team revenue is just going to be selling draft picks at the draft.
Well, because Cavs can be takers.
Well, there you go. Dan Gilbert has a lot of money. Yeah, I don't understand. You know, there reaches a certain point where you can only draft so many players. Like, you can only develop so many players in a given year.
True. It's true.
Especially when you're just getting owned by, you know, guys that are actually... And that's the thing that drives me nuts. Did you hear the story about the Rockets today where they were talking about how they have their front office staff are doing like arena duties in the evening during COVID?
No.
Yeah, they're like paying them to shine shoes and run concession stands and stuff like that.
That's weird.
Because they're so damn cheap. And I'm like,
oh my God.
It's like, at one point do we become tired of these NBA teams that are being run like financial entities instead of, you know, actually presenting an entertaining basketball product? You know,
that is something that I mean, look, say what you want about Dan Gilbert. He's always
been an entertaining product
on the floor and continues to. Like, I watched the pregame show tonight because you can do that on the NBA app. And
the league pass,
who is this for? I mean, this is still like this sort of elaborate, you know, opening.
Well, they had Red Panda at halftime.
I know. I saw. I got to see the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that. And like Moondog didn't drop the balls at the end, which I was surprised about. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, that is one thing. You are absolutely right. The Cavs have always, I mean, aside from the night they had empty boxes on all the chairs, which was a bad metaphor. But they've done a pretty good job of consistently trying to put a good product on the floor. And, you know, there's other teams like that. The Pacers, you know, are consistently try to win. The Spurs, I was super impressed with the Spurs the other night.
Well, Pop just keeps doing it, right? I mean, just plugging guys into.
Oh, and you missed. So, have you seen Pop? Did you see
a little bit?
Oh my God! So, did you see the tweet I put and I posted it in the game thread? You probably didn't see it, but it was basically the I can't remember what the character's name is from Mad Max Fury Road with the white hair and the mask.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was basically that. I mean, I was like, I did not think I would see hippie, you know, post-apocalypse Greg Popovich, but that's what we're getting.
Post-apocalyptic? I know. Sorry, that was bad.
No, it was great. I love dad jokes, so I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting season. The West is, like you noted, infinitely better than the East. Like, how good would Memphis be in the East right now? Like, Memphis...
Oh, my gosh.
They'd probably be a seventh seed. And they're right at the edge of the playoffs.
By the way, Sacramento would be right in the mix of things in the 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, you're right. They would be. I mean, and New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting with the Cavs being, you know, kind of 16 and 27. They're still, you know, about 5 or 6 teams worse than them. And you're like, oh, that's... And one of them is actually trying to win, Washington.
Well, and I don't know why, because, I mean, that's just a train wreck of a team. So.
It is, but Bradley Beal is really, really good.
Oh, yeah, Brad Beal is. But, like, I don't know why Washington's not trying to get everything they possibly can. Like, they should go and get a bunch of those draft picks that, you know, Houston or OKC has. Because they're never going to be good.
So three teams can have all the draft picks.
Brad Beal's a really nice player. Brad Beal's too old to build around now. Like, you need to, like, cut bait at a certain point and try to get everything you can for him rather than, you know, make a ridiculous deal that you're never going to be able to unload.
I would say that if I think if they don't end up with like a top five pick in this draft, they may end up trading Brad Beal for that reason alone. You know what I mean? Right. Like, this draft's so good. If they got lucky and got another player, it could actually work out. But
right, but like
other
like
than
Russ
that,
Russ is no slouch. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, except when he is. This is the problem. You know, he's a real hit or miss player. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting.
Still score. He could still, but he could still throw up a triple double without trying and score 50 if he wants. Like, he's still that guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting rest of the season. For sure.
I hope the Cavs figure it out. I don't know that there are any easy answers. You know, it's really going to be interesting to see what they do with Sexton, what they can do with Sexton without hamstringing themselves for years to come, which
or alienating
kind of
the relationship.
The business of doing. Well, they've already been in the business of doing it with Kevin Love and, you know, this whole Drummond situation. It's like they have, how are they not hard capped by the way, with this massive salaries that they've taken on?
So who are the big – but the big salaries are really only Love and Drummond and then everybody else. I mean, Larry Nance only makes only $11 million, and he's a bargain for that. And, you know, Chetty Osman makes about that. And it's – you know, other than that, everybody's kind of on a rookie deal.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
I mean –
The Love deal's just so
– Yeah. Hey, you know, they took a chance. I don't think it was the worst chance, but it's clearly not working out.
It wasn't. And just unfortunately, he's just not the guy that you necessarily can gamble on health wise. So,
Yeah, it's a great
or
point.
Or like at all.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. He's not. he's kind of Mr. Glass at this point.
But there's guys that I'd be okay not seeing in a Cavs uniform after this.
Like,
I'm all the way out on Jetty now.
Yeah, I honestly at this point I feel like I like Jetty the player a lot, but I almost feel like he needs a change of scenery as much as the Cavs need to find somebody else in that role.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying I don't know that I want to continue down the Sexton road.
I don't know if I want to continue down the JB Bickerstaff road. That's kind of my problem. But the Cavs aren't good at hiring head coaches. They're only good at hiring associate head coaches.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Who was the last coach? Tyloo, I think, you know, whatever, but. I think the last head coach of the Cavs that I felt like, oh yeah, that guy will win us an extra 10, 15 games a year just because he's a good coach was probably Mike Fratello.
I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, you could maybe say that about Paul Silas, but boy, they put a team around Paul Silas that was not a Paul Silas team. Let's put it that way.
Right. Right. No, but like, I mean, I think of Fratello, I think of Lenny Wilkins, and I think of like Bill Fitch. Like those are the three really great coaches that the Cavs have had, you know, in their history.
Yeah, and it was so much fun because I watched, after the game the other night, I watched a tribute to Joe Tate. And
oh, yeah.
The majority of it was filmed when they retired his jersey, or retired his mic, basically, and hung his banner in the rafters.
And put his, the voice of the Cavs,
And it was so great because, you know, Fratello was on that, Bill Fitch was on that, Lenny Wilkins was on that, and it was like, man, they just had this unbelievable string of really smart, really well-spoken, kind of, you know, super intelligent coaches.
Well, even George Karl in the
George Karl,
remember he got that '82 team or whatever, way further than anybody thought he could.
Yeah, and who was? Didn't they have one more coach that ended up coaching the Bullets for a while?
Yeah. Randy Whitman.
Randy Whitman wasn't a bad coach for the Cavs either. So yeah,
he wasn't bad.
Yeah. I
coached the Hawks for a while too.
You know, and the last guy that I thought, man, that guy's a really good coach, I would say I would put Ty Lue in
John
that group.
Lucas.
I'd put Ty Lue in that group because I felt like Ty Lue was the perfect coach for that group.
Yeah,
you know
I guess
what I mean.
So. So much of that was about LeBron, though, too.
Well, it was, but he was the perfect guy for... I don't know if any other coach helps LeBron get back from 3-1 the way he did. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's a good point. I wouldn't give him short shrift on that. Yeah, I mean, he's
And that, to me, is the greatest championship in NBA history. And
yes,
I don't sell anybody short on that championship.
No. But hiring and keeping Longobardi was really tarnished that image for me.
Well, yeah, and then of course, you know, the John Beilein thing last year was like
the
further we got into that, we're like, what were they?
Oh my god.
Let's just hire an ancient guy that literally has no idea what he's doing.
And on top
and literally of that, he's alienating the players.
Well, yeah, and he's gonna alienate the players by, you know, with his charmingly racist ways. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally the no more malarkey.
Honestly, that guy just felt like, that guy just felt like, hey, I'm going to get paid and I'm going to give it a shot. He realized like, oh, this isn't like college at all.
So. No, this was a bad idea. Like, you know, it was a bad idea because he gave back the money.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, there's a handful. Look at what... people can say negative things about Tom Thibodeau, and you know, I don't think Thibodeau knows how to. I don't think he could, you know, run an offense to save his life. But he knows how to change a culture of the team and get them to buy in defensively. I mean, look at the Knicks.
Yeah, well, I would say the other side of that is Tom Thibodeau is smart enough to know that he doesn't know that, and he's just going to get an assistant to do that.
No,
you know.
No, but that's just it. Like he, you know, his style wears out, you know.
Oh, for sure.
He's not a coach that has longevity. Like, there's very few of those kinds of guys anymore.
Yeah. And the guy that get you from, you know, being a developing team to being a contending team, like, it doesn't feel like they're the same guy in the NBA for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe Nick Nurse is kind of the exception to that rule, or, you know, I don't know, Buttonholzer.
Maybe, but ask yourself this: if Toronto misses the playoffs this year,
yeah,
and they got to blow it up and start over with Pascal, and maybe, you know, whatever draft pick they get, and they have another year or two of losing. You think Nick Nurse survives that in today's NBA?
Probably
really?
In
all
the
right.
same way that, you know, Rick
Ty
Carlisle.
Lue didn't.
Well, no, but I would say, well, Ty Lue could have stayed. That was Ty Lue's choice, honestly.
Yeah.
I think Ty Lue checked out, and I think he kind of made them fire him.
Right.
You know.
Well, but who's to say Nick Nurse doesn't, too?
Yeah, but there's guys that have done that. I mean, you look at Rick Carlisle, you look at Popovich, you look at Eric Spoelstra, who, you know, those three guys to me are, at least Spoelstra and Popovich are probably the two best coaches in the NBA. All the way away. And I put Monty Williams in that list too, because I have a tremendous amount of respect for Monty Williams. But it's that there's not very many of those guys that can take a that can also coach the developing players as well as a championship player.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
You know, and part of it is because the best NBA players are also ridiculously smart and are basically coaches on the floor. You know,
right.
LeBron's head coach's job is to get roadblocks out of his way and do all the things that he doesn't need to spend time worrying about.
Right.
You know,
and to your point earlier about Ty Lue, like he was the right coach to get the most out of LeBron in that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it certainly wasn't the fighter pilot.
No. Which, poor David Blatt.
Which was, again, I don't even think
I actually think David Blatt would have done a really good job with this young team.
Oh, I'm with you. I think I think that was a whole, like, they kind of had no idea that LeBron was really coming back and they'd already hired David Blatt. Although,
right,
you know, part of me is like, well, if you think that's a possibility, why don't you hire somebody that you think would be a good fit with LeBron? But, you know, that's why I thought David Fizdale would be a great fit, but he hasn't had great head coaching stints either. Although,
nope.
I think Memphis and I think New York were both bad fits for him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it certainly, I don't know who I would hire if the Cavs, you know, did let JB Bickerstaff go. He's probably earned himself another season.
I think for sure another septuagenarian Michigan college.
They'd make another run at Izzo.
Tom Izzo. Why not? Yeah,
God.
He didn't get him. He didn't get him 10 years ago.
Well, you know, he has. I think he had a controversy this last week for shaking a player on the sideline. So it's like putting his hands.
That sounds about right.
Yeah,
it sounds perfect for the Cavs. He'll last till, like, you know, January. Last to MLK Day.
Yeah, man, they are really bad at hiring head coaches, aren't they?
They are really bad at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things the Cavs are terrible at: hiring head coaches and keeping
drafting point guards,
and paying GMs that win them championships. Yeah.
Well, we've gone on way we've gone like beyond
the call. Yeah. Yeah.
It's about 5:30 in the morning my time.
Oh, so. I'm sorry. I do want to get your take on. You know, it is one game, but Halliburton versus Okoro, I think we know who won this round.
Oh, yeah. Although, I will say, I think Luke Walton knows more about how to use Tyrese Halliburton than J.B. Bickerstaff knows how to use Isaac Okoro to their strengths.
That's a great point.
I mean, look, if you swap those two guys... I'm not convinced that Tyrese Halliburton would have the same level of success under J.B. Bickerstaff and his lack of an offensive mindset, you know, versus what Luke Walton might have been able to do with an Isaac Okoro in that system. So
that's also a good point.
In that system, Isaac Okoro would be doing the things he's good at, which is have the ball in his hands, be a finisher, you know,
yeah,
like
make some plays in the guy court. That, yeah,
you know, doing that, the backdoor cuts and things like that. I mean, like, there'd be a lot more of that. And he's actually probably a kind of player that would really benefit a team like Sacramento, who does typically have problems stopping people. So
that's true.
Anyways, for what it's worth, I think you can always sort of play that game. I think Tyrese Halliburton probably had it in his head to, you know, show the Cavs what they missed. Like, he probably
I'm with you. And, And more power to him for it. I mean, I was super impressed with the guy. I thought he played lights out.
Oh, no, he missed like four shots, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And super heady play all the way around for the most part. I mean,
and that was the other guy on that coming out too, right? I mean, his trademark was that he's a very smart player, but I actually think Okoro is a very smart player too. I just think it's his smarts are more on the defensive side than the offensive side. He's had some, I mean, obviously I saw more of his games early on before I left for this job, but I think he's got some great instincts, and I think that could be honed by the right coaching.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I will say the other side of it is this season, with literally they're playing more than a game every other day, it's really hard to put changes in.
Oh, it's a meat grinder.
It is. It is just...
We can barely keep up with it.
And all we're doing is writing recaps.
I say the royal we because I haven't done a recap since January.
E.G., you'll always be part of the royal we.
Well, thanks for that.
Absolutely. No, we all get it. I mean, I'm with you. It's hard to do. I mean, there's another guy I was impressed with tonight was Richaun Holmes, who I've always wanted the Caps to get. You know, unrestricted free agent, by the way.
I was going to say, he's been in some trade talks, right, Richaun Holmes?
Yeah, well, because he's an unrestricted free agent, and Harrison Barnes and Bielicha. And, that's a team, you know, that makes as little sense as the Cavs do from a way they've kind of managed the long-term assets. You know, Buddy Hield supposedly on the trade block. You know, a lot of people...
Well, remember when Marvin Bagley III was, like, the next big thing, and then
well, you heard the thing that
what happened to him.
So you heard this week they offered Marvin Bagley to the Pistons for Sadiq Bey, who was drafted like 15th, and the and has played really well, and the Pistons said no. So
jeez,
I think actually Bagley could probably be had. I think there's another situation where both sides probably need a trade, but
Well,
we'll see what happens. It should be an interesting week. We'll probably have a podcast posted Friday morning as well. I know Elijah Kim wanted to have a post-trade deadline podcast. Sure. So look forward to that. And thank you, EG, for staying up to the wee hours of to the Eastern European dawn.
No, it's good. It's good to get back on the pod with you and.
You
know, I got a couple more weeks. I'll be back in the States in mid-April, so I should be able to catch the last month of the season and chip in with some things. So
nice. Anything you got to pitch?
Any crazy
Eastern European stories?
Oh, I got so many of those, but it may not be pod-worthy.
Pod appropriate
at a certain point, but yeah.
Or maybe you wait till you're no longer in country.
Yeah, most of them go around in and around this movie, but I started watching this show that I never got into when it was live, and now I'm like super into it. Leftovers. I don't know if you watched that, but
Damon Lindelof. I have not watched it.
Honestly, man, it's such a it's a little bit of misery porn, I guess, but beyond, if you get past that, the acting is fantastic. So, if you haven't checked out
I've heard three seasons. You and one of my best friends from Alaska both recommended it, and I ever since Damon Lindelof is literally responsible for two of the biggest, you know, screen disappointments of my life, Prometheus and The End of Lost. So I do hold a grudge, but I've heard he's really good, and you know, the first season of Watchmen was phenomenal. So
yeah it was. And
so
I
might have to give it a try.
Yeah, it's worth a spin if you get a chance. And
did you ever give Raised by Wolves a shot?
I did. I liked that a lot.
Oh, did you watch the whole series?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was super interesting. I mean, I thought it was the perfect kind of length with the number of episodes too.
Yeah.
Like any more than that would have been kind of a drag. So.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. I don't have too much to pitch. I think, the newest season, The Expanse, which just wrapped recently, was pretty solid. But I haven't been into too much else other than, you know, working and right. listening to The Hold Steady, which I pitched on the last podcast. So
yeah, no, I like The Hold Steady. I haven't listened to the new one, but there's a new I think it's new Killers album.
That came out last fall. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they just released a deluxe version or something.
Okay, nice.
This month, so. But yeah, it's a good listen. Nice. If you're into the Killers.
I thought it was a solid effort. I'm trying to think.
It's not Sam's Town, but you know, it's not bad.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've listened to anything else good. I got on a big Cars kick this week again, just because.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, I love the Cars. Yeah, when Rick Ocasek died, I probably listened to him for about a month straight, and then this week I just kind of got back into him again. So,
yeah, did I ever pitch one of my favorite Canadian bands is this band called Wolf Parade.
And, oh yeah, I love Wolf Parade.
Yeah. So do you listen to Spencer Krug's other stuff?
No, I have not.
Like, so do yourself a favor. Because I went back and I was listening to this because I used to love this album and I just started listening to it here just on the treadmill or whatever. But there's this sort of side band that he's in called Sunset Rubdown, and they did three
albums.
Oh, I've
heard of Sunset Rubdown. Yep.
So the third and the last Sunset Rubdown album was called Dragon Slayer, and the whole, I mean, honestly, every song is fantastic. So it's like eight or nine songs, but, you know, cover to cover, just greatness. If you haven't listened to it, check it out. It's from like 2009. So it's not exactly new. It's, you know,
it's new to us because we're old.
That's right. But yeah, if you get a chance, check it out.
I will say the other one I wanted to pitch was an East Coast kind of underground rap band called Aesop Rock.
I love A$AP Rock. Yeah.
Yeah. So their new album that came out in the last year is really good.
That's cool.
It is called Spirit World Field Guide. It's nice. Excellent. So check it out.
Oh, also a new Group Love album just dropped last week.
Nice. Nice. And
if you're a Group Love fan,
have you watched movie. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, have you watched the Zack Snyder cut yet?
No.
It's the big
one. It's 4 hours.
It's 4 hours. That's a big commitment.
Especially on this job. I have to parcel out my time. So I can,
well, plus
I can
you're
like
staring
hour-long
at screens days. All day anyway, probably.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. So.
Yeah, and it's all in, oddly enough, 4:3 format, which just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. That's a little bizarre.
That's a lot bizarre. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, I heard like the whole colorization of it is different too, right?
I guess. What was the one I heard the other day? Somebody was making fun of it and saying that they were going to release an all black and white cut. Anyway. Well, that's all she wrote for Cavs the podcast. Check out the trade deadline coming up, and a lot of Cavs games in our future, and hopefully EG can catch some of them, and hopefully
Coast Swing, they'll be on, you know, in my early morning as opposed to my really late night. So,
well, thanks for being on, EG, and stay safe.
That's good to be here.
Safe travels, and it was great talking to you. And as always,
likewise, man.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire. Lost your home. Lose your partner. And we're out.